Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Well, it's an honor today, and a bit of an unusual honor at that, too. Montana Chief Justice Corey Swanson, this is the Montana Supreme Court, is in studio today. I'm going to look at our judicial system across the state. One of the big things is outreach, and outreach from the judicial branch. Rather interesting to talk about here. Talk about judicial reform, speeding up some case outcomes, also bringing innovation and efficiency to the bench as well. He's got a budget as well. There are a lot of things about our courts I don't think we get. Expecting a great conversation today with Montana Chief Justice Corey Swanson on Voices of Montana. Corey Swanson in studio, our Chief Justice. Good morning, Corey. The Honorable Corey Swanson, your honor.
I tell people that if I'm in a robe with a gavel, then call me Chief Justice or whatever, but you just call me Corey in the studio. That'd be just fine.
And this is what we like about Montana, too. You know, you're somebody who's been accessible to the public and can have a conversation, whether it's your ideals or their ideals you want to talk about. And you want to carry that on from, as you kind of said here, get out behind the curtain a little bit from the bench. I think that's vital. Why are you doing it?
Well, it's a great question, and I appreciate you, Tom, having me on. And that's you know, we talk a little bit in the campaign, right?
Yeah.
You see some candidates in the campaign, and then when you get done with the campaign, you get elected, you got to do the job. I started realizing this first year in my job that the communication need is as strong as it was during the campaign. Uh-huh. People need to have an idea of what their government's doing for them. And it's hard to do that as a judge because, you know, you can't talk in detail about the cases you're working on. That could be unfair to the parties. And frankly, you're kind of pretty busy job, and it's kind of a lot of reading and writing and occasionally exciting, but occasionally boring.
I can't imagine the job, you know, it boggles my mind all that you do, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
But I wanted to start a process, and I'm just calling it outreach because I don't have a better word for it than that. But I want to start an outreach effort from the judicial branch to more people in Montana because we're, as you know, we're in a weird time in our country right now and in Montana where we're seeing escalating, disagreements about things that are escalating into conflict. Well, America has a long history of disagreeing with each other, don't we? That's how we started, and that's probably how we'll continue as long as we are a republic.
But it's been good for us as long as we're civil about it.
Exactly. So what I want to do is I want to ensure that people can understand more about the court system, how we work, and make myself and other judges more accessible, and hopefully get rid of some of the concerns that there is this secret guy behind the curtain or whatever that's making decisions. Every decision that a judge makes, they're actually required by law to explain why they make that decision. They're required by the rules of civil procedure and the rules of evidence, but they're also required by law to explain what they're doing. And because when we review a decision from a lower judge, it's all based on, you know, the facts and the law that went into that decision, and then the judge's reasoning explaining the decision. And then every time we issue an opinion, it's in writing, in detail, sometimes too long, but a lot of folks don't read those. And so I'm trying to kind of say, okay, let's prime the pump of conversation here between the court system and everybody else to improve and increase understanding. And that's kind of the starting point.
Okay. What's that next step then? Because I love this. You know, I've been doing this both inside and outside, you know, journalistically, working in some government positions as well. Typically, the judicial branch does not come out from on the other side of the bench, and they're comfortable there, and I think we've gotten comfortable with them there. Like you say, they do have to explain a lot of things, but I think there's still some things left. What is that step?
Well, we're doing it right now. I mean, this is part of it. So I started this, I started planning for this literally during the legislative session, because I could tell during the legislative session there were a bunch of bill proposals to do this and that to the judiciary. And when you're a judge and you're facing that legislation, really what you got to do to the most part is stay out of it, right? But as the Chief Justice, I'm responsible for all the budget administration of the branch. So there's times when I have to engage in the discussion with legislative stuff simply from the logistics and functionality of the organization. So I do that. But there's a lot of conversations where I realize, okay, there, whether I agree or disagree with the specific policy proposals, what is it showing us? It's showing us there's a level of dissatisfaction with the judiciary and how it's functioning from at least a portion of our state. Well, I feel like as a leader, I have an obligation to meet that head on. Not meet it head on as in let's fight, meet right. it head on as in let's sit down and talk to each other and figure out what's at the bottom of this. And to do that, I said, okay, first thing let's do is let's bring people together. So this outreach effort, I'm in Billings right now because the Montana Judges Association is having a conference here. And we have to do a certain number of hours of judicial education every year. So we have conference twice a year. Had long talks with judges yesterday and told them basically what I'm about to tell you as far as, okay, it's time for us to extend our hands out and reach out to connect with communities, legislators, people of influence, so they can feel welcome, come to the courtroom, see what we do, ask whatever questions you want to ask, and learn about our process. That's the beginning point. Go ahead. I'll go on.
No, I was just going to say, I'm dying to hear their response to that. Yeah. And what did they respond when you said, this is what maybe you should think about doing?
Yeah. Well, as Chief Justice, I didn't say, maybe you should think about doing. I said, you're doing this.
We are going to be doing this.
But I said, I'm helping you on the way. And you, if you ever do an event and you want an advocate, a cheerleader, I'll be there. But the response was good because, judges, the district judges across the state, I mean, if you look at their schedules, they're busy. They're real busy. In between, you're running between hearing and trial and hearing and trial, and there's briefings coming in, and you have deadlines of when you get, you look at briefings and you have to issue an order and get that out because people are waiting on that. So they are busy folks. I don't want to just pile on a whole bunch of busy work for them, okay? A whole bunch of extraneous things. However, having said that, when you're a district judge, you are a person of influence in that community, and you want to connect with other people. And so, brother, here's my objective. Number one, I want people to come to court. So if you're listening, you need to know that the vast majority, like over 95% or probably 95% of court proceedings, okay, maybe it's 90, I don't know, I didn't do the math. I'm a lawyer, I'm not a math guy, Tom. But most court proceedings are open to the public. Yeah. And I would tell you, go watch. It's fascinating. Go watch a jury trial. Go watch just a regular day. It's called Law in Motion, when they stack up, you know, somewhere between 5 and 50 different criminal cases, and they have to just run through them one after another. And it's a slice of humanity. You got to go see it. Because you'll see people dealing with often their worst day of their life and now the aftermath, and people that are good faith on both sides trying to help them through that. Okay. Yeah. Go watch it. Go just learn the process, talk to the lawyers, talk to the judge, don't interrupt obviously, but make a point of at some point connecting. And hopefully what we'll do is start having human to human connections. I understand we're in a world of social media and all that, but sometimes that's a poor substitute for just human connection, recognizing judge is a human being trying to do their best. The legislator is a human being trying to do their best. They may or may not they may not agree on everything, but let's start with that conversation.
Corey Swanson, again, Montana's Chief Justice here, a Montana native, grew up along the High Line, and then later kind of settled in Broadwater County for a number of years. Still there, as a matter of fact, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So my folks moved around quite a bit when I was young, and they were a little bit nomadic. So I've lived in Sunburst, Cutbank, Valier, Shelby, Guilford, Haver. Where am I forgetting? Well, in between Guilford and Haver, Great Falls, Billings, Missoula, Townsend, Manhattan, Belgrade.
So, that's actually advantageous to you, isn't it? To have lived in all those communities.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny because you even when I was campaigning, it was funny. Like I would, you know, I was in Shelby in third grade and fifth grade, and we kind of like plot our life based on where we were in. So I'm doing a campaign event, and all these people I went to grade school with are like, "Yeah, come, we'll do it. We'll do an event at the golf course in Shelby." You know, same with Haver. So, but yeah. So I have to do correct one thing. I'm not sure that this matters. I still think I'm a Montana native. I'm multiple generations on both sides. But my parents lived in Sunburst, and I was born in Milk River.
It hurts deeply.
It hurts deeply. And so I tell the story. It was
we'll
very,
edit that out of the podcast.
No, no. Okay, it's very dramatic. I'll tell you, I had to escape from a socialist country as a newborn. I mean, those doctors were like, I came out and they were instantly hitting me in the butt. I don't know why. I'm like, who are these mean socialists? So I had to
give me America. Right?
I had to sneak across the border as a 2-day-old child. And, you know, but I'm legal.
Are you legal? You're would they consider you a naturalized citizen?
Yeah, I'm considered natural born. Yeah. So my parents are both American citizens. So I, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing that. I mean, this is something that I appreciate because we want to know. We're a state of relationship.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. So I'm sure as you're on the bench, you find that a little bit unique and maybe sometimes awkward. With friends that you've known forever, and they're going to treat you like you've been friends forever in that regard. But your position is one of, I mean, that you talk about a level of influence. You're a person of influence on that seat. So do you find that a conflict at time, or can you put the robe away, you know?
Well, I don't know. I guess I view it as we're running a race, right? I'm holding the baton for the moment. And then at some point I'm going to hand it off to somebody else. So it isn't about me. It's about this ongoing thing we call America, right? And the Republic and Montana and how we function. And so it doesn't work. Anyone that's in public service who starts getting a big head and starts going, oh, it's all about me. Well, they very, very quickly have lost the whole point of why they're there.
Yeah,
so,
right. Yeah.
I don't really care about the whole title and all that. It's more of like I get in and realize, wow, there's a lot of work to do here. So the responsibility is pretty significant. And there's kind of two roles, right? As Chief Justice, number one, I'm one of seven deciding cases. We're all equals on the court when it comes to opinions, votes, drafting, all that. Even though I'm the one that assigns the opinions, but I can't make people change their vote, right?
Yeah.
But then when it comes to the chief position of the administrative work, all the budget, the dealing with, you know, there's a lot of things you deal with that I deal with as far as random motions, as far as if I have to assign a judge to take over for another judge. So there's all those things. That's the part of it where the outreach has become more and more obvious that this is what I need to do.
I want to, I'm kind of against the break, but I'm going to ask this question now. Public trust. I mean, it seems like, and this is what we'll pick up when we talk about maybe security, increased security. Maybe those measures need to be evaluated. Judicial reform. There's a lot of ways that people are imagining that, so to speak. And I know you have some ideas regarding that as well. But talk about how important it is and maybe why it came about that we need to restore a certain amount of public trust in our judicial system.
Yeah. Well, so the thing that you have to always remember about whatever case you're working on as a judge is that for the people involved, that's the most important case in the state for them. And it might be the most important thing going on in their life at that moment. So you have to treat every case as very important, and you have to be very diligent and disciplined on applying the correct method of analyzing the facts, of interpreting the law to give the best outcome. And I don't mean best outcome for them. I mean the most accurate outcome based on the facts and the law. And then if sometimes that consequence is this way or that way, even if you don't like the consequence, you have to faithfully interpret the law. The reason for that is because if you don't start doing that, you start getting outcomes based on personalities, then you lose that trust that the system itself is reliable and clear and consistent. So that's probably the number one thing I think that judges can do for trust and for people's belief that the system works, even if the outcome sometimes is painful. The facts of that case are what would have brought you to the painful outcome, not the personal whim of a judge.
Speaking with the Honorable Corey Swanson, Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, elected in that last election. Good job, Montana. Here doing some outreach, as a matter of fact. One of the topics here is outreach and increasing public trust in the courts, but also security is one of those cases to talk about, to increase security with the tension that we have right now. And reform will be on the plate. As a matter of fact, the legislature, I think, went through some 24 judicial reform bills. I won't ask our Honorable Corey Swanson his opinion on those, but I will ask, you know, what makes good judicial reform? I'm going to get to that here first or after this. You talked about outreach. We're talking about increasing public trust. You know, what does that look like?
Well, so what it looks like first, I'm kind of leading the charge, but it's, I'm just one guy, right? So you've got to, get the entire legal community on board. So, a week ago in Missoula, myself and Judge Mercer, who's a district judge from, the legend, right?
Yeah, John Mercer?
Yeah. He was a four-term speaker of the House. I think the only person in Montana history that's done that. So he's now a district judge in Polson in Lake County. And so he and I spoke at a legal conference to about 300 people in Missoula.
Really?
Very, very good dialogue on this very issue. I've had a number of high school teachers that say, hey, I'd love to have a lawyer or a judge come speak to my class about how the government works, how the courts work. So I'm encouraging those connections. We're inviting legislators, you know, first, but really anybody that wants to come to court, meet judges, learn how the system works. And then variety of different groups that I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to lawyers in general, saying, lawyers, I want you guys to get involved in making those connections. And I see this as a grassroots effort. I don't think that social media wars, those tend to create division rather than harmony.
Yeah.
What I'm looking for here is let's connect as human beings and talk face to face. And then there's a variety of groups. I'm speaking to the, I think the Farm Bureau later this year. I'm speaking to the Chamber Business Days in January, the number of legal conferences. So I'm beginning the effort, but the goal is that many, many hands get involved in this work.
And you were, maybe I don't recall, previously a legislator as well?
No, I worked for the legislature.
Okay,
So I worked for the Speaker of the House in the 2001 session. Oh. I worked for the Senate leadership in a special session in 2002. And then my firm, when I came out of law school, did lobbying. So I did some lobbying as well as litigation. And then when I was a county attorney, I was in the leadership of the county attorney organization. So I was at the legislature quite a bit. So I've been around the legislature a lot. It has been invaluable to doing this job, to understand the legislative process. Yeah. It's an essential part of preparation to be Chief Justice, I would say.
And so then vice versa as well. It's essential, I think, as you're noting, for your judges to understand the legislature. So you invited them to invite. I suppose it was, you know, what's your hope behind that?
Great. I made it clear I'm not asking judges to be lobbyists.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking them to change minds. I'm asking them, and I'm asking, you know, legislators and people that care about this to simply connect on the human level, to begin to understand each other. So it's like a slight rabbit trail. But when I was in the military and deployed overseas.
Thank you for your service,
in Iraq.
By the way.
My first deployment in particular was a horribly big time violent one. And I found myself struggling a lot through that year. Like, how do I be a good soldier and be a good Christian? Because I was, your heart gets hard going through some difficult times. I realized that late in that deployment, I had begun to think of the enemy as less than human, which I think you kind of have to do as a soldier to do your job.
Yep.
But that can't be your lifelong mindset. And so when I came home from that, God really softened my heart and did some things to kind of, you know, heal me and get through that. But that awareness has stayed with me. We can't dehumanize people we disagree with. We have to remember, you know, you have to be able to look at the world through their eyes. You don't have to agree, but you have to have that appreciation of seeing from their point of view what they're doing. And then, of course, if you disagree and stick to your principles, don't change your principles, but humanize the other participant in that conversation. So that's at rock bottom what I want to do.
Boy, and I really appreciate that as well. Dehumanizing, it seems like it's gotten pretty easy for us. And you know, you talk about it being a necessary part in certain jobs, like the military. You've got to protect, you know, you build this wall around some of your emotions so you can carry your job to the best of your ability, because there are, you know, justifiable reasons behind that. It's gotten way too easy in my mind to dehumanize an enemy nowadays.
Yeah. True.
Let's take this call here. So thank you for focusing on that. Skip in Hamilton, we'll get a quick one here before we take a break here in just a few minutes. Good morning, Skip. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with the Honorable Corey Swanson.
And thank you very much, Tom and Honorable Corey Swanson. I'm over here in Hamilton. It's Bill Fulbright country. You know him.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a couple of fundraisers over here for you, and I was so delighted when you were elected Chief Justice. There were so many people in Ravalli County, especially, that were rooting for that, and because we knew that you'd bring all the right tools to the Supreme Court that we needed to finally have, and I hope that trend continues. So, sir, you're in the National Guard. I was hoping that if you so desired, you were able to still continue to do something with your service. I wasn't sure how much your new position inhibited that. And you said earlier that you actually lived along the High Line. You lived in Havre. I don't know if you've ever run into Dr. Earl Harrison. For a while, he was the flight surgeon for the National Guard. He lived in Havre for decades. But meanwhile, I just wanted to tell you thank you for starting a trend, because we all now feel so invigorated about our Supreme Court that we didn't feel before. And thank you for all your service in every way to the state and to our country. Thank you, sir.
Skip, I appreciate that comment.
So, Skip, thanks so much. Of course, I remember going to at least two events with you. I thought there were three when we ran into each other. So appreciate your support. And I don't know. My dad might have known that doctor from Havre. He was in the National Guard, and I was a little kid then. Well, seventh grade, I guess. So I don't know that doctor. So, and I agree with you on what you're saying. I've discovered. I think what happened over the last, if you look at the last 20 years of elections in Montana, in terms of candidates and in terms of fundraising, I feel like what's happened recently is that the conservative sleeping giant has awakened and started paying attention to the courts more than it had and more than the conservatives had in prior years and decades. And so, I don't know, we'll see where the trend goes, but I view that as a positive trend on the Guard. So I can stay in the National Guard, but I can't get paid.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So I'm still drilling, but I get what's called attendance points. I don't get money for drill pays because there's a constitution says that a judge cannot, or a justice cannot be, cannot have another occupation or profession for which they get pay. Oh. Or I think pay or compensation. I don't know the exact words. So I'm still in it to try and kind of finalize my retirement time. It's volunteer.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I did not know that. I appreciate knowing that now. And there's no, this is a bad joke, but there's no need for a tank commander at the Supreme Court.
Well, it's funny because now I'm an old has-been. I don't drive a desk. I don't drive a tank or a Bradley. So,
pleasure to have you in studio. And thank you guys for being here as well, making us part of your Montana Day. Corey Swanson, Montana's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Montana native, grew up along the High Line, as we talked about. And he shared having popped around quite a bit, many different places. Political science degree from Carroll College, great institution there. And then Juris Doctorate from the University of Montana. A lot of positions before this one as well. And I got to tell you, Corey, thanks for coming in. You know, as you talk about getting more outreach from the judicial branch, I think that's good. That's going to make it a little more comfortable and, restore some public trust. I want to say we had Attorney General Austin Knutson on Friday. And as I said, hey, Corey's going to be here on Thursday. He said, you know what, it's so good to have someone who's got prosecutorial experience on a bench like that. How important is that?
Well, it is. We have a huge percentage of our caseload is criminal law. I mean, it might be half. If not, it's close to that. And so I have lived in that world for a long time and done just a lot of the detailed work on so many of those complex issues of sentencing and rules of evidence and fair trial and all that stuff. So that has very much been an advantage for me in terms of handling some of those more difficult criminal law cases. And the other thing that you always have to recognize is that the people that are dealing with these issues are dealing with these issues at the district court level where, you know, things are moving fast and there's a constant demand for get things done because the next docket, I say it's like a factory where the indoor never stops.
Yeah.
And so you have to be pushing stuff out the outdoor. Mm. And so it's a real demand for district judges to try and operate efficiently. And so that's been beneficial for me to have that mindset of, okay, whatever opinion we do has to be clear and understandable so that district judges can rely on that for their next time they run into that weird issue. You can't get into this ivory tower, you know, a law professor who's kind of disconnected from the daily grind of practicing law and deciding cases.
What does reform look like for you? Because I know there's people who have different opinions about it. And as I said, going into the break, I think some are ideas that don't justify themselves. Others are in terms of reform. What does it look like to you?
Yeah. So briefly, I'll talk about one of them is security for courthouses. So we have occasionally have someone that can be a threat or can threaten judges or whatever. And we have to be able to have a place where jurors can come and feel safe, where litigants can come and feel safe, where judges can do their job without threats from the outside.
Yeah.
So we're working on that. Montana has the statute says that the counties pay for the courthouses, right? The judges are state elected officials.
Oh.
So it's a dynamic where you got to work with the counties, you got to work with the commissioners, you got to work with the sheriffs, you got to work with the judges and all together to work on a security plan. So we started that. I went and spoke at the MACO, the County Association, a few weeks ago. Spoke with the sheriffs at the MSPOA, Montana Sheriff's Peace Officers Association, spoke with the county attorneys. And I said, yesterday with the judges, I said, okay, we're all getting together here. We're working on a plan for improving courthouse security statewide. And we've already started this. Chief McGrath started this before I came on board. We have a person who's retired law enforcement who helps us with all these things.
Okay.
But we got to make more momentum. We need to gather more momentum. We need to make more progress. And so my goal here is that we get buy-in from all these stakeholders and have a legislative plan for next session, as well as we're doing incremental improvements along the way.
Yeah, because part of that, I mean, you can only control so much of that.
Right.
The rest of that happens while we, you know, the Charlie Kirk assassination. You know, I think that exemplified the worst of political violence. But yet, we weren't all outraged by it. And I don't mean that as a criticism. What I mean that to say is, we've become a little more accepting of, oh, wow, there's just crazy people out there and this is okay or this is going to happen.
Right.
You got to get rid of that.
You got to get rid of that. You look at any history, look at any society that devolves to that. Look at the end of the Roman Empire where they're just randomly assassinating. This guy assassinates this rival to become emperor and he's only there for a year and then his guards get bought off and they assassinate him and pretty soon the government stops working. Look at Japan before World War II. Before World War II, Japan had a conflict between the civilian and the Bushido tradition military leadership. And it was basically, they were assassinating each other, rival factions, to try and figure out who was going to be in control of government. And what happens is, then they get this very extreme government that, you know, tries to take over the Pacific. So any society where you get to that point where you can't talk, then you've got a problem.
Right. It shouldn't be led by just the best assassins,
exactly,
you know, to speak. And that's a bit of an exaggeration here as well, you know, to carry on this thought though. What more needs to be done then? You kind of went through that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The tensions.
Yeah.
Between, yeah.
Well, so reform that I'm looking at, the second item is, and this is a person by person effort. The way we decide cases. And so I don't talk a lot about this publicly because as I mentioned, I have two different roles as Chief Justice. And so if there's disagreements with my colleagues, we do those in the conference but where we also express them is in our opinions. Problem is people don't read them. So I would tell you, if you go to our website, all of our opinions are published, you should read them. And you'll see in our dissents, we do have disagreements on how we decide cases. And some of those disagreements are pretty significant. And, I would just say read those and you're going to see where we are and you're going to see the difference. And I think reforming our methodology toward judicial restraint is essential to well-functioning judiciary and to some of these concerns. Because the concern is if a court is making political decisions, then you can push back with political measures that harm the court. And I'm of the mindset of separation of powers, judiciary, do your job, legislature, do your job. Don't cross those streams. But to do that, the first stop on any reform is a judge has to ask himself, am I going beyond my power? Judicial restraint, I think, is the first stop on judicial reform.
I appreciated that a whole lot when you said it's up to the individual judge to practice and enforce judicial restraint. To me, that so go ahead and kind of carry on with that. But I just wanted to highlight that again. I think that's it's vital.
And then the next thing we're working on is our budget for the next legislative session. Before we get there, I want to have done a complete review of our budget. Every person, every dollar, every whatever it is that we're looking at. Because there are some places in the judicial budget, I can tell you right now, that are underfunded, mm-hmm. and it's hurting us. It's hurting certainly our technical support. We're underfunded. I think we've got some salary competitiveness problem where we're having a hard time recruiting law clerks, and court reporters are there's a concern that technology is going to take over the role of court reporter, which I think is going to be a problem because I think we're not going to get good quality records. So there's a number of things I want to do in the budget. Before I get there, I want to find out where we can save money. So we're doing a very thorough review of the budget to try and bring to the legislature areas where I can say, I've done a very exacting analysis of the budget. I can save money here, and I'm asking you to invest it over here where I need more money to make the court run better.
And one of those things that you talk about reform, that's one of those little things. You know, we think about judicial accountability and judicial restraint as being reform, but spending can be reform. Then decision-making and timeliness of some of these cases, that's another part of this reform.
That's a big one. And so some efficiency things we're working on, and we want to highlight what we're doing here in Billings. This is a big event. A couple weeks ago, we came and we announced this effort and decision for the district court in 13th Judicial District, which is Billings. They're going to get two new judges appointed by the governor that start January 1st. Then that will give them a total of 10 judges, and they're going to divide into two divisions, one for criminal and one for civil. And by specializing the docket, they've done a lot of analysis. We get some very smart judges here. They did all the smart work. I just said, good job, keep going. They believe that they are going to be more efficient in scheduling trials and in getting case outcomes quicker for both criminal and civil cases. And that's a good model that we're going to look at to see if it makes sense to do it elsewhere in the state. There's a lot of internal things we are trying to do to free up judges' time to do more judging and less administrative stuff that someone else can do. So I think in the long run, we're going to see dividends paid from those investments.
What do you think? And again, if it's conflicting, just let me know. But what do you think about some of these reform movements when it comes to electing judges? I think that one of the toughest votes that we have is to know who our judiciary is. Right. I'm not a fan of nonpartisan elections because I just think that's not transparency in my mind anyway. Mm-hmm. Where does that improve? How does that improve?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things there. I've talked to a number of justices from other states, and they have different systems. And so there's people have been talking about an appointment process. And this justice from a state where they went to an appointment process, he said people said that was going to take the politics out of it. It didn't take the politics out. It simply changed the politics to a different arena. And you see that nationally. You look at the Senate and all the games they play whenever you're trying to get a judge confirmed. Some states love it, and they say it works great. If you're talking about electing judges, then there's a question of whether to make them partisan or nonpartisan. I have, as I think everyone knows, spoke publicly against that idea at the legislature because I am concerned that shifts the focus to outcome-driven elections. Mm-hmm. I want a judge that's going to give me this outcome. Well, the reality is the outcome is the last part, not the first part of the analysis. The analysis, when I do a case, I start every case, I do a little mental exercise where I say, I don't know the correct outcome of this case because I just got the briefs, I haven't opened it, right? It's like at the beginning of a jury trial, the jury is presuming the defendant's guilty, or sorry, not guilty because they haven't seen any evidence, mm-hmm. right? So I begin every case. I don't know the outcome. but I believe there is a correct legal outcome, and my job is to find it. So I follow the journey of analysis, facts and law, to get to the right outcome. And that outcome is the result of that journey, the end point of the journey. I don't want a concern about a system where we say, okay, I want these outcomes and you guys figure out a way to get there. That's called activist judging. And whether it's conservative or liberal, it begins to undermine the trust in the system that we've talked about.
Corey Swanson in studio here, Montana's Chief Justice. Corey, I really appreciate you coming in. And you know, he just pops in. There's not an entourage around. You're traveling like you're a Montanan still, you know.
Well, that's who I am. So, yeah. So we left off and you were asking, okay, where do we do if we say we want people to be well-informed electors. We want them to know the difference between the candidates, and they have a candidate that agrees with their view of, I guess, how to do the job and the view of the law without it turning into a vote for me because I'll always support the Republicans or always support the Democrats.
I think a lot of people want that. Yeah. How do we get there?
It's literally the key, isn't it? It's the key to the entire ballgame. Well, it's hard to do that. Because of the system, and because as a judge you're saying, I can't preview how I might rule on a case. So last campaign, I had a group that sent me a questionnaire that was basically asking me those very pointed questions. Yeah. Will you always rule this? Will you rule this? And I wrote back and I said, well, can't do that by the canons of judicial ethics. I cannot preview an outcome on a case. So what that group did is then interpreted that as, I'm going to rule against them. And they spent millions of dollars in independent expenditures against me saying that I was going to rule against their pet issues. When all I did was say, I can't ethically answer your question the way you are posing it. So that's a challenge. Number one is pay attention to the judges, get to meet the judges, the ones that are campaigning. And right now there's one campaign for the Supreme Court for an open seat next year. Both judges running are accessible. I would say go to an event, meet them, talk to them.
Yeah.
But it is challenging. It is challenging. And I said, because I've been in that boat myself as a lawyer, even like, I don't know enough about these two to figure it out. So I don't blame you. And I do think you pay attention to the groups that support them or oppose them, but not just support or oppose them, the reason why they support or oppose them. If it's because they're like, well, this person will always rule for whatever, you know, for sportsmen. Well, I don't know what that means. I don't know what kind of promise was extracted to get that endorsement.
Yeah, and that's where transparency comes in too, and I appreciate that. We've got a lot of reform in the election process, I think, that to work through as well. It's not just judicially. So how about this for an outreach? A poker tournament where you put all the judges against anybody else who wants to come up against them.
Oh, boy.
And see who comes out on top. Right?
I would lose that.
You would? Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I bet you could tell who's bluffing, though, just from the look in their eyes. Corey, thanks. Thanks for doing this. Thanks for picking up the mantle of moving it forward in our public eyes, too. Appreciate
it. Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it very much.
You're still having some fun, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
good. Yeah. Take care of your family, too.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.